A stop-motion samurai film. That's the germ of an idea that grew into the sprawling fantasy film Kubo and the Two Strings. It's a coming-of-age epic set in fantasy Japan about a young storyteller who makes magic with music and origami paper.
If you must blink, do it now. Pay careful attention to everything you see. No matter how unusual it may seem. If you look away, even for an instant, then our hero will surely perish.
While the Disney and Pixar brands have become synonymous with blockbuster animated films, the small Portland-based studio behind Kubo has been quietly making its mark. Since it was founded a decade ago, Laika Entertainment has earned 3 Oscar nods for animation for its films Coraline, Paranorman, and The Box Trolls. The head of Laika is Travis Knight. He directed the film. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So this character, as we mentioned, is a musician. He plays a kind of banjo. What is it?
Yeah, it's called a shamisen. It's a 3-stringed instrument, kind of like the equivalent of a banjo, yeah.
And when he plays, the characters from his stories come to life as animated origami figurines.
That's right.
Give us some of the basics of stop-motion animation 101. Like, when I look at this little character of Kubo, is he a plastic model? A clay model?
Yeah, he's a little puppet. The basic way it works is that you have a puppet, and they typically made, they have a steel armature, which is like a little skeleton inside their body, and they're covered with a silicone skin, and, you know, they have cloth costumes, and in a lot of ways, it's like a live-action production house. It's just in miniature. We still have the same departments. We have, you know, costuming and hair, although in our hair department, we're actually creating the hair. And then we move these things a frame at a time. And the thing that we've done differently at Laika is that we try to merge technology and forward-thinking innovation with this 100-year-old art and craft. And it's that fusion of those things that makes the productions look so interesting, I believe.
The animation here is incredible. I mean, Kubo's journey takes him through, like, snowy, frostbitten landscapes. There's an ocean, a roaring ocean at the start of the film. And I've read that you've said that this isn't the kind of story typically people attempt to tell in stop animation. What are the challenges of, like, animating this range of landscapes?
Where to begin?
Start with that water, for God's sakes. I'm like, is this real water? Am I asking this question? Like, what am I looking at?
You know, at the beginning of the movie, you know, we recognize what this film was, which was it's a big, sweeping epic. And that's something that's really difficult to tell in animation, specifically in stop motion, because the way we make these things, they're effectively shot on tabletops in a crummy warehouse in Portland, Oregon. And, you know, we want to make it look like it's an endless, majestic vista, which is kind of absurd on its face. And so, you know, for things like the water, we ended up using panes of rippled shower glass that we would shoot, you know, a frame at a time. We had torn bits of paper that we'd use for cresting bits of water. One of my favorite things was we had this metal grid, and we covered it in garbage bags, and we moved it a frame at a time to give a sense of the motion of the waves going through the scene. And then we give that information to our visual effects department, and then they start to blend that stuff with computers and with computer simulations. But when you see it on screen, it behaves like water, which is important for the audience to understand what they're looking at, but it has a stylized look driven by classic forms of Japanese art.
I understand that the visual style is also influenced by the 20th century artist Kiyoshi Saito of Japan.
Yeah.
Can you talk about his style and how it influenced the look of the film? Like, what period essentially are you setting this in?
It is a period fantasy, so we're blending a lot of different things. You know, we take elements from Edo period Japan, we take elements from Heian period Japan. In terms of the visual inspiration from Kiyoshi Saito, he comes from a tradition of, you know, woodblock printmaking that goes back hundreds and hundreds of years, and yet he was always heavily influenced by Western thinkers, Western painters. And so he fused those things together in his art, and that's something that we try to weave into our environments as well.
At the heart of the film is this little boy character, a character who's lost a parent, his father.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, he embraces some new friends, one of which is a talking monkey, played here by Charlize Theron.
We grow stronger. The world grows more dangerous. Life has a funny way of keeping things balanced.
Monkey, do you ever say anything encouraging?
I encourage you not to die.
Charlize Theron there, and Art Parkinson playing the young boy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did you think about casting? Because as you said, this is set in fantasy Japan. Shirley Saran, not Japanese, obviously. Mm-hmm.
Also not a monkey.
But other than, I think, George Takei, it is mostly white cast. And how did you kind of think about how you're going to put this together?
I think that, you know, we evaluate these things in a lot of different dimensions. But I think it's important to note that acting in live action and acting in animation are two very different things with very different considerations. You know, in a live-action film, an actor's, you know, gender or age or ethnic or racial background or physical appearance can be character-defining qualities. But in an animated film, that's not true at all.
I ask because Western animation, I mean, cinema in general, frankly, doesn't have the best reputation in terms of representing Asian countries and cultures. And so, like, when you're trying to set a story in a place like Japan with these characters, how do you walk that line of kind of staying true to the atmosphere and the sense of place that you do so richly with the visuals without falling into stereotypes, right? Without being neglectful about some of the aspects of the culture.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for the first 2-3 years of a project, all we're doing is developing the script, the story, the characters, the world. And as part of that process, you are, you know, diving really deep into regional and historical research to make sure that you're grounding your fairy tale in the real world. You know, for me, I was 8 years old when I was first introduced to Japan. I tagged along with my dad on one of his business trips to Japan. And from the moment I set foot there, it was like I'd been transported to another world. It was so completely different than anything that I'd ever experienced. And so for me, that was the beginning of a love affair, a lifelong love affair with a great and beautiful culture.
You mentioned your father being a businessman. How old were you when you first started working with any kind of crafts or doing art?
Oh, I've been doing it my whole life. You know, I was a fairly lonely kid growing up, actually. I made friends slowly when I made them at all. And so a lot of times I would spend alone. And, you know, a lot of that time spent alone, I was creating. I was writing stories. I was making music. And it was just a way of expressing myself. It's something I've always been drawn to.
Is it me or do you and Kubo have a lot in common? That childhood sounds oddly familiar.
We do have a lot in common. You know, he's an artist. He's a musician. He's a storyteller. He's an animator, really, when you think about the way he brings these things to life.
And lonely.
And lonely. And the, you know, the center of his universe is his mother. And that was true for me as well. And this film, you know, explores that time in our lives when those things begin to shift and then irrevocably change, when we cross the Rubicon from childhood to adulthood, and the things that we gain and the things that we leave behind along the way, which can often be bittersweet. But it is a fundamental journey that we all go through.
Travis Knight, director of Kubo and the Two Strings, thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.